Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, now it's out of the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is May the 6th, 2025, it is the 10th day of Ziph, 2029. We're going to start our first service today with a song, and we're going to continue on in the Patriarchs and Prophets, and we're on page 125 verse 5. And we're going to chapter, the name of our chapter is the call of Abraham. Chapter 11, call of Abraham, name of our study. After the dispersion from the Babel idolatry, again, it became well nigh universal. And Yahweh finally left the hardened transgressors to follow their evil ways, while he chose Abraham of the line of Shem and made him the keeper of his law for the future generations. Abraham had grown up in the midst of superstition and heathenism. Even his father's household, by whom the knowledge of the Yahweh had been preserved, were yielding to the seductive influences surrounding them, and they served other gods than the Yahweh. Really, the true faith was not to become extinct, for Yahweh has ever preserved a remnant to serve him. Adam, Seth, Enoch, Methuselah, Noah, Shem, and the unbroken line had preserved from age to age the precious revealings of his will, for the son of Terah became the inheritor of this holy trust, for the idolatry invited him on every side, but in vain, for the faithful among the faithless, and corrupted by the prevailing apostasy, he steadfastly adhered unto the worship of the one true Yahweh. For the Yahweh is nigh unto all them that call upon him, and to all that call upon him in the truth. For he communicated his will unto Abraham, and gave him a distinct knowledge of the requirements of his law, and of the salvation that would be accomplished through his son Yahshua. For there was given unto Abraham the promise, especially dear for the people of that age, of a numerous posterity and of a national greatness. I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great. And thou shalt be a blessing. And unto this was added the assurance, precious above every other, to the inheritor of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant, that of his line, that the Redeemer of the world should come. Now, this is talking about Yahshua. He is to come through the line of Abraham. In thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. That's talking about the 12 tribes. Yet as the first condition of the fulfillment, there was to be a test of the faith. A sacrifice was demanded. For the message of the Yahweh came unto Abraham, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, and to a land that I will show thee, in the order that Yahweh might qualify him for his great work as the keeper of the sacred oracles. Abraham must be separated from the association of his early life, for the influence of the kindred and friends would interfere with the training which the Yahweh purposed to give his servant. Now that Abraham was in a special sense connected with the heaven, he must dwell among strangers. His character must be peculiar, differing from all the world. He could not even explain his course of action so as to be understood by his friends. For the spiritual things are spiritually discerned, and his motives and actions were not comprehended by his idolatrous kindred. By the faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. For the Abraham, unquestioning obedience, is one of the most striking evidences of the faith to be found in all the Bible. Unto him faith was the substance of the things hoped for, with the evidence of the things not seen. For the relying upon the divine promise without the least outward assurance of its fulfillment, he abandoned home and kindred and native land and went forth. He knew not whether to follow whether Yahweh should lead by the faith. He became a sojourner in the land of the promise, as in a land not his own, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. It was no light test that was thus brought upon the Abraham, no small sacrifice that was required of him. There were strong ties to bind him to his country, his kindred, and his home. But he did not hesitate to obey the call, for he had no question to ask concerning the land of the promise, whether the soil was fertile and the climate healthful, whether the country offered agreeable surroundings, and would afford opportunities for the amassing wealth. Yahweh has spoken, and his servant must obey. For the happiest place on the earth for him was the place where Yahweh would have him to be. Many are still tested, as was the Abraham, for they do not hear the voice of Yahweh speaking directly from the heavens. But he calls them by the teachings of his word and the events of his providence. They may be required to abandon a career that promises wealth and honor, to leave congenial and profitable associations, and separate from kindred, to interrupt what appears to be only a path of the self-denial, hardship and sacrifice, Yahweh has a work for them to do. But a life of ease and the influence of their friends and kindred would hinder the development of the very traits essential for its non-accomplishment. He calls them away from the human influence and aid and leads them to feel the need of his help and to depend upon him alone, that he may reveal himself unto them. Who is ready at the call of the providence to renounce cherished plans and familiar associations? Who will accept the new duties and enter untried fields during Yahweh's work with the firm and willing heart? For Yahshua said, counting his losses gain, he who will do this has the faith of Abraham and will share with him that far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory with which the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be accomplished, to be compared. For the call from the heaven first came to Abraham while he dwelt in Ur of the Chaldees. And in the obedience unto it, he removed to Haran. This far his father's family accompanied him. For with their idolatry, they united the worship of the true Yahweh. Here Abraham remained till the death of Terah. But from his father's grave, the divine voice bade him go forward. His brother Nahor, with his household, clung to their home and their idols. Besides, Sarah, the wife of Abraham, only Lot, the son of Haran, long since dead, chose to share the patriarch's pilgrim life. Yet it was a large company that set out from Mesopotamia, for the Abraham already possessed extensive flocks and herds, the riches of the East, and he was surrounded by a numerous body of the servants and retainers. He was departing from the land of his father, never to return, and he took with him all that he had, the substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in her land. Among these were many led by the higher consideration than those of the service and self-interest. During their day in Haran, both Abraham and Sarah had led others to the worship and service of the true Yahweh. Those attached themselves to the patriarch's household had accompanied him to the land of promise, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. And into the land of Canaan they came. For the place where they first tarried was Shechem, under the shade of the oaks of the Moreh, in a wide grassy valley with its olive groves and gushing springs between the Mount Ebal on the one side and the Mount Gerizim on the other. Abraham made his encampment, for it was a fair and goodly country that the patriarch had entered, a land of the brooks of water, of the fountains and depths, that spring out of the valleys and hills, a land of the wheat and barley, and wine, and fig trees, and the pomegranates, so it says of the vines, and the fig trees and pomegranates, the land of the olive and honey, that to the worshiper of the Yahweh a heavy shadow rested upon the wooded hill and fruitful plain. For the Canaanite was then in the land. Abraham had reached the goal of his hopes to find a country occupied by an alien race and overspread with the idolatry. In the groves were set up the altars of the false god, and Abraham sacrifices were offered up on the neighboring heights. While he clung to the divine promise, it was not without distressful for foreboding that he pitched his tent. Then the Yahweh appeared unto Abraham and said, "Unto thy seed will I give this land." His faith was strengthened by this assurance that the divine presence was with him, that he was not left unto the mercy of the wicked. And there builded he an altar unto Yahweh, who appeared unto him still a wayfarer. He soon removed to a spot near Bethel, and again erected an altar and called upon the name of Yahweh. For Abraham, as a friend of Yahweh, set us a worthy example, for he was a life, for his was a life of prayer. Wherever he pitched his tent, close beside it was set up his altar, calling all within his encampment to the morning and the evening sacrifices. When his tent was removed, the altar remained. In the following years, there were those among the roving Canaanites who received the instruction from Abraham. And whenever one of these came to that altar, he knew who had been there before him. And when he had pitched his tent, he repaired the altar and there worshipped the living Yahweh. For Abraham continued to journey southward, and again his faith was tested. For the heavens withheld their rain, the brooks ceased to flow in the valley, and the grass withered on the plain. The flocks and the herds found no pasture, and starvation threatened the whole encampment. Did not the patriarch now question the leadings of the providence? Did he not look back with the longing for the plenty of the Chaldeans' plains? All were eagerly watching to see what Abraham would do. As trouble after trouble came upon him, so long as his confidence appeared unshaken, they felt that there was hope. They were assured that Yahweh was his friend and that he was still guiding him. Abraham could not explain the leadings of the providence, for he had not realized his expectation, that he held fast unto the promise, I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. With the earnest prayer, he considered how to preserve the life of his people and his flock, but he would not allow circumstances to shake his faith in Yahweh's word. To escape the famine, he went down into Egypt. He did not forsake Canaan, or in his extremity turn back to the Chaldean land from which he came, where there was no scarcity of bread, but he sought a temporary refuge as near as possible to the land of the promise, intending shortly to return where Yahweh had placed him. For Yahweh in his providence had brought this trial upon Abraham to teach him lessons of submission, patience, and faith. Lessons that were to be placed on record for the benefit of all who should afterward be called to endure affliction. For Yahweh leads his children by a way that they know not, but he does not forget or cast off those who put their trust in him, for he permitted affliction to come upon Job, but he did not forsake him. He allowed the beloved John to be exiled to the lonely Patmos. Really, the Son of Yahweh met him there, and his vision was filled with the scenes of the immortal glory, for Yahweh permits trials to assail his people, that by their consistency and obedience, they themselves may be spiritually enriched, and that their example may be a source of strength unto others. I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith Yahweh, thoughts of the peace and not of evil. The very trials that attack our faith most severely and make it seem that Yahweh has forsaken us are to lead us closer to Yahshua, that we may lay all our burdens at his feet and experience the peace which he will give us in the exchange. For Yahweh has always tried his people in the furnace of the affliction. It is in the heat of the furnace that the dross is separated from the true gold of the Christian character. For Yahshua watches the test. He knows what is needed to purify the precious metal, that it may reflect the radiance of his love. It is by the close testing trial that Yahweh disciplines his servant, for he sees that some have powers which may be used in the advancement of his work, and he puts these persons upon trial in the providence that he brings them into the position that tests their character and reveal defects and weaknesses that have been hidden from their own knowledge. He gives them opportunity for the correcting of these defects and to fit themselves for his service, for he shows them their own weakness and teaches them to lean upon Him, for He is their only help and safeguard. This His object is attained, for they are educated, trained, and disciplined, prepared to fulfill the grand purpose for which their powers were given them. When the Yahweh calls them to action, they are ready, and heavenly angels can unite with them in the work to be accomplished on the earth. During his stay in Egypt, Abraham gave evidence that he was not free from the human weakness and imperfection, and the concealing the fact that Sarah was his wife, he betrayed a distrust of the divine care, a lack of that lofty faith and courage so often and nobly exemplified in his life, for the Sarah was fair to look upon, and he doubted not that the dusky Egyptians would covet the beautiful stranger, and that in order to secure her, they would not scruple to slay her husband. He reasoned that he was not guilty of the falsehood in the representing Sarah as his sister, for she was the daughter of his father, and though not of his mother, that concealment of the real relation between them was deception. No deviation from the strict integrity and making Yahweh's approval. Due to Abraham's lack of the faith, Sarah was placed in a great peril, for the king of Egypt, being informed of her beauty, had caused her to be taken to his place, intending to make her his wife. But Yahweh, in his great mercy, protected Sarah by sending judgment upon the royal household. By this means, the monarch learned the truth in the matter, and indignant at the deception practiced upon him, he reproved Abraham and restored unto him his wife, saying, "What is this that thou hast done unto me? Why saidest thou, she is thy sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold, thy wife, take her and go thy way." Abraham had been greatly favored by the king. Even now, Pharaoh would permit no harm to be done him or his company, but ordered a guard to conduct them in safety out of his dominions. At this time, laws were made prohibiting the Egyptian from intercourse with the foreign shepherd and any such familiarity as eating or drinking with them. Pharaoh's dismissal of the Abraham was kind and generous, but he bade him leave Egypt, for he dared not permit him to remain. He had ignorantly been about to do him a serious injury. But Yahweh had interposed and saved the monarch from committing so great a sin, for the Pharaoh saw in this stranger a man whom the Yahweh of heaven honored, and he feared to have in his kingdom one who was so evidently under the divine favor. Should the Abraham remain in Egypt, his increasing wealth and honor would be likely to excite the envy or covetousness of the Egyptian, and some injury might be done him for which the monarch would be held responsible. and which might again bring judgment upon the royal house. For the warning that had been given unto Pharaoh proved a protection to Abraham. That is, after intercourse with the heathen peoples, for the matter could not be kept secret, and it was seen that the Yahweh scheme, whom Abraham worshipped, would protect his servant, and that any injury done him would be avenged. It is a dangerous thing to wrong one of the children of the King of Heaven. For the psalmist refers to this chapter in the Abraham experience, which he says in the speaking of the chosen people that the Yahweh reproved kings for their sakes, saying, touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm. There is an interesting similarity between Abraham's experience in Egypt and that of his posterity centuries later. Both went down into Egypt on account of a famine, and both sojourned there through the manifestation of the divine judgment in their behalf, for the fear of them fell upon the Egyptians, and enriched by the gifts of the heathen, they went out with great... That's the end of chapter 11. Now we go to chapter 12 with Abraham and Canaan. Okay, let's continue. For the Abraham and Canaan, chapter 12, Patriarchs and Prophets. And we're on page 132. For the Abraham returned to Canaan, the very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. Lot was still with them, and again they came to Bethel. Let's back up and reread where it says Lot was still with Abraham, and again they came to Bethel and pitched their tents by the altar which they had before erected. They soon found that the increased possessions brought increased trouble. In the midst of the hardship and trials, they had dwelt together in the harmony. But in that prosperity, there was danger of strife between them, for the pasturage was not sufficient for the flocks and herds of both, and the frequent disputes among the herdsmen were brought for the settlement to their masters. It was evident that they must separate. Abraham was lost a senior and years, and his superior in relation in the wealth and in the position, yet he was the first to propose plans for the preserving peace, although the whole land had been given him by the Yahweh himself. He courteously waived this right. Let there be no strife, he said, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. here the noble, unselfish spirit of Abraham was displayed. How many, under the tender circumstances, would all hazard a cling to their individual rights and preferences? How many households have thus been rent asunder? How many churches have been divided, making the cause of the church a byword and a reproach among the wicked? Let there be no strife between us. And this, said to Abraham, for we be brethren, not only by the natural relationship, but as the worshippers of the true Yahweh, for the children of the Yahweh, the world over, are one family, and the same, the spirit of the love and conciliation that should govern them. Be kindly affection one to another with the brotherly love, and the honor preferring one another is the teaching of our Savior for the cultivation of a uniform courtesy, a willingness to do to others as we, do unto others as we would have them to do unto us. Would annihilate half of the ills of the life, for the spirit of the self-aggrandizement is the spirit of the Satan. But the heart in which the love of Yahshua is cherished will possess that charity which seeketh not her own. Such will lead the divine injunction. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Although Lot owed his prosperity to his connection with Abraham, he manifested no gratitude to his benefactor. Courtesy would have dictated that he yield the choice to Abraham, but instead of this, he selfishly endeavored to grasp all its advantages. He lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plains of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, even as the garden of the Yahweh, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest into Zoar, for the most fertile region in all of the Palestine was the Jordan Valley, reminding the beholder of the lost paradise and equaling the beauty and productiveness of the Nile and rich plains he had so lately left. For there were cities also wealthy and beautiful, inviting to the profitable traffic and their crowded marts. Dazzled with the vision of the worldly gain, Lot overlooked the moral and spiritual evils that would be encouraged there. For the inhabitants of the plain were sinners before the Yahweh exceedingly. But of this he was ignorant, or knowing, gave it but little weight. He chose him all the plain of Jordan and pitched his tent towards Sodom. How little did he foresee the terrible result of that selfish choice. As the separation from Lot, Abraham again received from Yahweh a promise of the whole country. Soon after this, he removed to Hebron, pitching his tent under the oaks of Mamre, and erecting beside it an altar to Yahweh, in the free air of those upland plains, with their olive groves and vineyards, their fields of the waving grain, and the wide pasture grounds of the encircling hills, he dwelt well content with his simple patriarchal life, and leaving to Lot the perilous luxury of the Vale of Sodom. But Abraham was honored by the surrounding nations as a mighty prince and a wise and able chief. He did not shut away his influence from his neighbors, his life and character in their marked contrast under those of the worshippers of the idols, exerted a telling influence in the favor of the true faith, for his allegiance unto Yahweh was unswerving, while his affability and benevolence inspired confidence and friendship, and his unaffected greatness commanded respect and honor. For his religion was not held as a precious treasure to be jealously guarded and enjoyed solely by the possessor. For the true religion cannot be thus held, for such a spirit is contrary unto the principle of the gospel. While Yahshua is dwelling in the heart, it is impossible to conceal the light of his presence or for that light to grow dim. On the contrary, it will grow brighter and brighter as the day by day, the midst of the selfishness and sin that envelop the soul are dispelled by the bright beams of the Son of Righteousness. For the people of Yahweh are his representatives upon the earth, and he intends that they shall be lights in the moral darkness of this world, scattered all over the country, and the towns, cities, and villages. They are the Yahweh's witnesses as the channels unto which he will communicate to an unbelieving world the knowledge of his will and the wonders of his grace. It is his plan that all who are the partakers of the great salvation shall be missionaries for him. For the pity of the Christian constitutes the standard by which worldlings judge the gospel. For the child's patiently born blessings gratefully receive the meekness, kindness, mercy, and love, and habitually exhibited are the lights that shine forth in the character before the world, revealing the contrast with the darkness that comes of the selfishness of the natural heart. Rich in the faith, noble in the generosity, unfaltering in the obedience, and humble in the simplicity of his pilgrim's life, Abraham was also wise in the diplomacy and brave and skillful in war. Notwithstanding, he was known as the teacher of a new religion. He had three royal brothers, rulers of the Amorite plains in which he dwelt, manifested their friendship by inviting him to enter into an alliance with them for the greater security. For the country was filled with the violence and oppression. An occasion soon arose for him to avail himself of this alliance. Chedorlaomer, king of the Elam, had invaded Canaan 14 years before and made it tributary unto him. Several of the princes now revolted, and the Elamite king with the four allies again marched into their country to reduce them to submission. Five kings of the Canaan joined their forces and met the invaders in the vale of the Siddim, but only to be completely overthrown. A large part of the army was cut to pieces, and those who escaped fled for their safety into the mountains, where the victors plundered the cities of the plain and departed with rich spoil and many captives, among whom were Lot and his family. For the Abraham dwelling in peace in the oak groves at Mamre learned from one of the fugitives the story of the battle and the calamity that had befallen his nephew. He had cherished no unkind memory of Lot's ingratitude. All his affection for him was awakened, and he determined that he should be rescued, seeking first of all the divine counsel. Abraham prepared for the war. From his own encampment, he summoned 318 trained servants, men trained in the field of it, in the service of their master and in the practice of the arms. For his confederates, Mamre, Eshcol, and Aner joined him with their bands, and together they started in the pursuit of the invaders. For the Elamites and their allies had encamped at the bend on the northern border of the Canaan. Flushed with the victory and having no fear of an assault from their vanquished foes, they had given themselves up to reveling, for the patriarch divided his force so as to approach from the different directions and came upon the encampment the night. His attack so vigorous and unexpected resulted in the speedy victory, for the king of Elam was slain, and his panic-stricken forces were utterly routed. Lot and his family, with all the prisoners and their goods, were recovered, and a rich booty fell into the hands of the victors. Unto Abraham, under the Yahweh, the triumph was due, for the worshippers of the Yahweh had not only rendered a great service to the country, but had proved himself a man of valor. For it was said that righteousness is not cowardice, and that Abraham's religion made him courageous in the maintaining the right and defending the oppressed. His heroic act gave him a widespread influence among the surrounding tribes. On his return, the king of Sodom came out with his retinue to honor the conqueror, for he bade him take the goods, begging only that the prisoners should be restored. By the usage of war, the spoils belonged to the conquerors. But Abraham had undertaken this expedition with no purpose of gain, and he refused to take advantage of the unfortunate, only stipulating that the Confederates should receive the portion under which they were entitled. Few, if subjected to such a test, would have shown themselves as noble as did Abraham. Few would have resisted the temptation to secure so rich a booty, for his example is a rebuke unto them and to the self-seeking mercenary spirit. Abraham regarded the claims of the justice and humanity. His conduct illustrates the inspired maxim, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I have lifted up mine hand, he said, unto the Asher, the Most High, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread, even unto a shoe latch, and that I will not take anything that is thine. This thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich, for he would give them no occasion to think that he had engaged in the warfare for the sake of gain, or to attribute his prosperity to their gifts or favor. Yahweh had promised to bless Abraham, and unto him the glory should be ascribed. Another who came out to welcome the victorious patriarch was Melchizedek, king of Salem, who brought forth bread and wine for the refreshment of his army. As a priest of the Most High Yahweh, he pronounced a blessing upon Abraham and gave a thanks unto the Yahweh who had wrought so great a deliverance by his servant, and Abraham give him tithes of alms. For the Abraham gladly returned to his tents and his flocks, but his mind was disturbed by the harassing thoughts. He had been a man of peace so far as possible, shunning enmity and strife, and with horror he recalled the scene of the carnage he had witnessed. But the nation whose forces he had defeated would doubtless renew the invasion of Canaan and make him the special object of their vengeance, becoming thus involved in the national quarrels. The peaceful quiet of his life would be broken. Furthermore, he had not entered upon the possession of the Canaan, nor could he now hope for an heir unto whom the promise might be fulfilled. In a vision of the night, the divine voice is again heard. Fear not, Abram, were the words of the prince of the princes. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. But his mind was so oppressed of the foreboding that he could not now grasp the promise with the unquestioning confidence as hitherto for. He prayed for some tangible evidence that it would be fulfilled, and now was a covenant promise to be realized, while the gift of his son was withheld. "What wilt thou give me?" he said. "Seeing I go childless, and no one born in my house is mine heir." For he promised and made his trusted servant Eliezer, his son, by adoption and the inheritor of his possession. But he was assured that a child of his own was to be his heir. Then he was led outside his tent and told to look up into the unnumbered stars glittering in the heavens, and as he did so, the words were spoken, "So shall thy seed be." Abraham believed Yahweh, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. Still the patriarch begged for some visible token as a confirmation of his faith and as an evidence to all the generations that Yahweh's gracious purposes toward them would be accomplished. Yahweh condescended to enter into a covenant with his servant, employing such forms as were customary among men for the ratification of a solemn engagement. By the divine direction, Abraham sacrificed a heifer, a she-goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, dividing the bodies and laying the pieces a little distance apart. To these he added a turtle dove and a young pigeon, which however, were not divided. This being done, he reverently passed between the parts of the sacrifice, making a solemn vow unto Yahweh of the perpetual obedience. Watchful and steadfast, he remained beside the carcasses till the going down of the sun, to guard them from being defiled or devoured by the birds of prey. About sunset, he sank into a deep sleep, and lo, a horror of a great darkness fell upon him, and the voice of Yahweh was heard, bidding him not to expect immediate possession of the promised land, and pointing forward unto the sufferings of his posterity before their establishment into Canaan, the plan of the redemption was here opened unto him in the death of Yahshua, the great sacrifice, and his coming in the glory. Abraham saw also the earth restored to its Eden beauty. There it is, right there. To be given him for an exhausting or an everlasting possession as the final and complete fulfillment of the promise. As a pledge of this covenant of Yahweh with men, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp, symbols of the divine presence, passed between the severed victims, totally consuming them, and again a voice was heard by the Abraham, confirming the gift of the land of Canaan unto his descendants, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. And Abraham had been nearly 25 years in the Canaan, Yahweh appeared unto him and said, I am the Almighty Yahweh. Walk before me and be thou perfect. In awe, the patriarch fell upon his face, and the message continued, Behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. He's a token of the fulfillment of this covenant. His name, heretofore called Abram, was changed into Abraham, which signifies father of a great multitude. For the Sarai name became Sarah, but the principles for the princes were for, said the divine voice, she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. At this time, the rite of the circumcision was given unto Abraham as a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had yet been uncircumcised. It was to be observed by the patriarch and his descendants as a token that they were devoted to the service of Yahweh and thus separated from the idolaters, and that Yahweh accepted them as his peculiar treasure. By this rite, they were pledged to fulfill on their part the conditions of the covenant made with Abraham, for they were not to contract marriages with the heathen, for by so doing they would lose their reverence for the Yahweh and his holy law. They would be tempted to engage in the sinful practices of the other nations and would be seduced into the idolatry. For the Yahweh conferred great honor upon the Abraham. Angels of the heaven walked and talked with him as a friend with a friend. When the judgments were about to be visited upon the Sodom, the fact was not hidden from him, and he became an intercessor with the Yahweh for the sinners. His interview with the angels present also a beautiful example of the hospitality. In the hot summer noontide, the patriarch was sitting in his tent door, looking out over the quiet landscape, when he saw in the distance three travelers approaching. Before reaching his tent, the strangers halted, as if consulting as to their course, without waiting for them to solicit favors. Abraham rose quietly, and as they were turning in to another direction, he hastened after them and with the utmost courtesy urged them to honor him by turning for the refreshment. With his own hands, he brought water that they might wash the dust of travel from their feet. He himself selected their food, and while they were at rest under the cooling shade, an entertainment was made ready, and he stood respectfully beside them while they partook of his hospitality. For this act of the courtesy, Yahweh regarded as of sufficient importance to record in his word, and 1,000 years later, it was referred to by an inspired apostle. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. For the Abraham has seen in his gift only 3 tarred wayfarers, little thinking that among them was one whom he might worship without sin. But the true character of the heavenly messenger was now revealed. Though they were on their way as ministers of the wrath, yet unto Abraham, the man of the faith, they spoke first of the blessing, though Yahweh is strict to mark iniquity, and to punish transgression, he takes no delight in the vengeance, for the work of the destruction is a strange work to him who is infinite in the love, for the secret of the Yahweh is with them that fear him. For the Abraham had honored Yahweh, and the Yahweh honored him, taking him into his counsel, and revealing unto him his purposes. Shall I hide from the Abraham that thing which I do, saith Yahweh? For the cry of the Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous. I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according unto the cry of it which has come unto me. And if not, I will know that Yahweh knew well the message of the Sodom's guilt. But he expressed himself after the manner of men, that the justice of his dealings might be understood. Before bringing judgment upon the transgressors, he would go himself to institute an examination of their course if they had not passed the limits of the divine mercy. He would still grant them space for the repentance. 2 of the heavenly messengers departed, leaving the Abraham alone with him, whom he now knew to be the son of Yahweh. And the man of the faith pleaded for the inhabitants of Sodom. Once he had saved them by his sword, now he endeavored to save them by the prayer. For the Lord and his household were still dwellers there. And the unselfish love that prompted Abraham to the rescue from the Elamites now sought to save them, if it were Yahweh's will, from the storm of the divine judgment. With a deep reverence and humility, he urged his plea. I have taken upon me to speak unto the other, which am but dust and ashes, for there was no self-confidence, no boasting of his own righteousness. He did not claim favor on the ground of his obedience or of the sacrifices he had made in the doing Yahweh's will. Himself a sinner, he pleaded in the sinner's behalf. Such a spirit all who approach Yahweh should possess. Yet Abraham manifested the confidence of a child pleading with a loved father. He came close to the heavenly messenger and fervently urged his petition. Though Lot had become a dweller in Sodom, he did not partake in the iniquity of its inhabitants. Abraham thought that in that populous city, there must be other worshippers of the true God. And in view of this, he preached that he, far from the to do after the manner to say the righteous with the wicked. Thus be far from thee, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Abraham asked not once merely, but many times, waxing bolder as his requests were granted. He continued until he gained the assurance that if even 10 righteous persons could be found in it, the city would be spared. Love for the perishing souls inspired the Abraham's prayer, while he loathed the sins of that corrupt city. He desired that the sinners might be saved, for his deep interest for the Sodom shows the anxiety that we should feel for the impenitent. We should cherish hatred of sin, but pity and love for the sinner. All around us are souls going down to ruin as hopeless, as terrible as that which befell Sodom. Every day the probation of some is closing. Every hour some are passing beyond the reach of mercy. And where are the voices of the warnings and entreaties to bid the sinner flee from this fearful doom? Where are the hands stretched out for the drawing of him back from the dead? Where are those who with the humility and persevering faith are pleading with Yahweh for him? For the spirit of Abraham was the spirit of the Yahshua, for the son of the Yahweh is himself the great intercessor in the sinner's behalf. He who has paid the price for its redemption knows the worth of the human soul. With an antagonism to evil such as can exist only in a mature, spotlessly pure Yahshua, manifested toward the sinners a love which the infinite goodness alone could conceive. In the agonies of the crucifixion, himself burdened with the awful weight of the sins of the whole world, he prayed for his revilers and murderers. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Of Abraham, it is written that he was called the friend of the Yahweh, for the father of all them that believe. For the testimony of the Yahweh concerning this faithful patriarch is: Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And again, I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Yahweh to do justice and judgment, that the Yahweh may bring upon the Abraham that which he has spoken of him. It was a high honor unto which Abraham was called, that of being the father of the people who for centuries were the guardians and preservers of the truth and of the Yahweh for the world, of that people to whom all the nations of the earth should be blessed, and the advent of the promised Messiah, that he who called the patriarch judged him worthy, for it is Yahweh that speaks, he who understands the thoughts afar off and places the right estimate upon men, says, I know him. There would be on the part of the Abraham no betraying of the truth for the selfish purposes. He would keep the law and deal justly and righteously, and he would not only fear the Yahweh himself, but would cultivate religion in his home. He would instruct his family in righteousness, for the law of Yahweh would be the rule in his household. This brings in verse 50, our contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11, click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.